For so long, many of you have been asking for more from the High Performance Podcast, and now you can get it. I'm pleased to say the High Performance app is available for you to download now. Simply search for High Performance in the App Store right now, and then use your exclusive code HPApp for exclusive content, untold stories, and things you won't see or hear anywhere else. Check it out right now, the High Performance Podcast app.
Hi there. You're listening to High Performance, the award-winning podcast that unlocks the minds of some of the most fascinating people on the planet. I'm Jake Humphrey, and alongside Professor Damien Hughes, we learn from the stories, successes, and struggles of our guests, allowing us all to explore, be challenged, and to grow. Here's what's coming up today.
You know, careers are careers. I mean, football's a short one, and they do come to an end, but not being able to, like, kind of go through it how you'd want to go through it, it's kind of tough to take as well, I suppose. We won the championship. We nearly got relegated the season after, first season in the Prem. And then the second year in the Prem, we go on and win it. Like, if you look at them as 3 years in football, it's just untouchable. I don't think you're going to get that. And then even the year after that, we got to the quarterfinals of the Champions League. It's not something that happens all the time, that. And I love football at Leicester. And I've never got it back since I left there. Obviously, like, I'm sobering up. And I'm in this cell. And I'm thinking, this is not you at all. It's not you as a person. It's not how you want to be as a person. Like, you need to get hold of yourself here. It's the darkest I've ever felt, 100%. It was almost like you're drowning a bit and you forgot how to swim. Why am I here and not even playing?
So today we welcome a Premier League winner whose story is about so much more than just lifting that trophy. Danny Drinkwater is one of the most talked about and controversial players of the last few years. Yet today, he tells you his story in his own words, and nothing is off the table. It's time to find out what really went on behind the headlines. And we start with some big personal news as we welcome Danny Drinkwater to High Performance.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
By the way, there is some bad language in this episode of High Performance. Welcome to High Performance.
Thank you.
You seem like a man who's ready to talk.
Yeah, just about.
Well, let's start with some news then. That I suppose you should probably share the news rather than me, right?
Yeah, I guess I can do. I'd just like to announce my retirement from professional football. Probably been a long time coming, maybe, especially with the last year. But now I think it's time to officially announce it now.
And how does it feel even saying that?
Do you know what? I didn't actually think it bothered me, but saying it then, it's almost like, you know, it's scratching a nerve a bit, but I think I've been ready for it. I think, like I said outside, you know, I think not stopping at my peak and kind of it simmered down a little bit has kind of helped the transition, definitely.
When did the moment sort of dawn on you that, all right, that's it then?
I think I've been in limbo for too long. I think I've either been kind of wanting to play but not getting the opportunity to play at kind of a standard or a level where I felt valued. So I just thought, like, I'm wrestling here for no reason. I'm happy not playing football, but I'm happy playing football. So do I just shake hands with a sport kind of thing?
So I can see, like, when you say I'd like to announce my retirement, you can see then, like, the emotion.
Yeah.
What does it stir in you when you say it?
It's all I've known. It's been my life since I was 6-7 years old, I think. So it's not, you know, it's never going to be like an easy thing. I think the way it's kind of died down in a way has definitely helped. If I was playing week in, week out and I had to say, like, I've got to stop maybe through injury or through just age, not being able to, like, get about the pitch like I'd like to, I think it'd be trickier.
And is there a level that you wouldn't consider playing at?
I mean, I've had quite a few offers from championship clubs and stuff. I just never felt like the burn. It just did nothing for me. I spent the last year playing football on loan at Reading. Found, you know, I was unfit. Found the first 6 months, like, really hard. Last end of the season, Paul Ince came in. And, you know, just having his old school kind of methods and stuff really helped me. And then I kind of found my feet again towards the end. But, going into the season after that, not having been snapped up was kind of a bit of like a, something don't feel right here kind of thing. So I think then it was like I either pushed on fitness-wise by myself or I kind of just, like I said, just shook hands with the sport.
What's that emotion like when you're a Premier League winner in his early 30s who was bought for multi-millions of pounds by one of the biggest clubs in the country and suddenly, like, the offers aren't coming in? Is it a sense of rejection? Do you feel forgotten about?
Yeah, it's probably a bit of both. I must have been scratching my head for weeks. I remember speaking to someone else in football and I was like, I just don't get it. How has no one, like, come and took a little chance, you know, just to get me really fit? Because they know what I'm capable of when I'm fit. Like, I just need to get fit. I've never been really obsessed with football. I've just absolutely loved it. So then the idea of me dropping down is fine. I've not got a problem with that. It was the idea of not playing to my worth. When I left United, I had this thing in the back of my head that was burning for years, and it was to get back to, like, a top 4 or 5 team. And I think when I did that, it was almost like, you know, I'd not only proven it to myself, but it was almost like a, you know, kind of like a dig, like, shouldn't let me go, like, I'll prove you wrong kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I think that was kind of one of the big things that spurred me on throughout my career. It wasn't the thought of dropping down leagues and stuff till I can't move. It was the thought of, you know, kind of proving people wrong, I think.
So what did Manchester United teach you then about high performance?
Oh, everything. I can't remember anyone growing up at United and saying a bad thing. Like, literally from things off the field to everything on the field. It taught you how to behave. It taught you how to address people. It taught you how to, you know, manage yourself on the pitch. You know, it wasn't easy. I seen kids, like, get cut at young ages, like friend, really good friends at the time. And it wasn't easy. But, you know, if you was one of the small minority that made it, it was such a good thing.
And who were the people that you remember as being what we would call cultural architects? Who were the people around there setting the tone, letting you know the standards required at that football club?
I mean, when you look at Sir Alex, he was always the king.
And what about when you got towards the first team? Who were the players you looked at and thought, oh, that's the level, okay?
Yeah. I mean, I was in the same building as Paul Scholes, Roy Keane, Gary Neville. Like, the motivation, you just turned a corner in the corridor and it was like, wow. Like, you know, you were almost like starstruck, and you literally in the gym next to him. It was a bit surreal. There was this one summer, Cristiano Ronaldo was there for, I think, 9 or 10 months, you know, and then the season kind of ended, and he left that summer, and he wasn't this big machine. You know, he was like a thin, like, kind of young teenager as it was, and he come back after that summer and he looked like he'd just grown. It was crazy. And then even seeing that, you know, you're looking at that and you're thinking, oh, that's where I need to kind of get to. That's the kind of level, do you know what I mean? I remember that summer, that whole season, I just absolutely smashed the gym because of what I seen in him. Didn't get out of the gym all summer, yeah.
And do you ever remember getting any words of advice or guidance from any of those players you've just referenced?
Yeah, there was. I mean, there was a few times where they, you know, they'd pull you. I remember we played when we was in the reserves and that, and Danny Welbeck was like a real, like, he's still obviously a really good footballer, but he was highly thought of in the team. And, you know, quite a lot of the first team and stuff would help him, especially Rio was really close with Welbs. And then, you know, you'd get people like Fletch and stuff would give you like a nudge and be like, you know, you need to get your head down here and kind of crack on, because you're not too far away from where you need to be. Which is obviously, you know, as a young player, you absolutely love that.
And what about Ferguson? Like, he's famous for his man management. Yeah. Is there any sort of examples you can give of his?
I had a few dealings with Sir Alex, to be honest. Wow. So for some reason, I always got proper close with like the chefs at the clubs. And I love my food and I love cooking and all that. So just naturally. And I remember I was waiting for this spaghetti bolognese, what Mike, the chef at United at the time, used to do fresh. And I was like, bloody hell, Mike, any chance? Next minute, running back in my head. I was like, what the? And then he's like, you dare speak to him like that again? And I was like, oh. And he's like, apologise. And then Mike, the chef's like behind the oven, like, I'm like, sorry, mate. He's like, I thought so. Wow.
That's valuable though, isn't it?
For stuff you remember. Standards. Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's like, you know, at the time as a young kid, you're probably thinking, look, you know, like, you know. But then when you get older, you're like, wow, that taught me so much. Just being around the building, I thought it was a great place to like, to grow older, for sure.
So how and when was the news broken to you that it wasn't going to happen for you at United?
Yeah, it was 21. So I went through all the kind of loan kind of structure that's really beneficial as a player as well at a young age. And yeah, I was about 21. And I think it was when I had a couple of unsuccessful loans that didn't really go like to plan. And then I was at Barnsley, which I absolutely loved that club. And then Leicester came in for a bid, and then United kind of like were saying, I think it's time. And I was like, well, you know, I can't say no. So I guess I just move on.
So when you went to these loans as a young lad, it must have felt like a bit of a culture shock. What was it that you struggled with?
I think a part of it was how physical it was. I mean, I was still a kid when I was 18, 19 years old. I had nothing on me. I was like a chicken bone.
So the day that you have to pack up your stuff and leave and go to Leicester, there's obviously an element of like, I've been bought by another club, I'm wanted, you know, I'm going to have a career. But it's also like that dream of year after year just fighting to become a Manchester United player had gone. Was that moment difficult? Like, did you fight and sort of say, no, like, I can make it as a United player, give me another season? Or did you just accept the club's decision?
No, I think I just accepted it. I think I had no choice, to be honest. I think if the club was to say no to the offers, I think that, you know, you kind of got something behind you then to really like get your teeth stuck into kind of thing. But I just think when a club kind of accepts an offer from another club, you know, it's, they're kind of saying, we want the money instead of you kind of thing.
Did it hurt?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, definitely. And I remember going back now, there was no communication at all between me and the club. It was literally done between like agents, and I was like 7 years. I was 7 years old. I was there from 21. It's quite a long time. And it was nothing like thanks or like well done, good luck and all that at the time. It was a bit deflating for sure.
Maybe your first lesson at that moment about how brutal the world of professional sport is.
I think it was, mate, yeah, because you go from being protected so much at United to then, like, there you go, kind of deal with it. But you do get taught really good things along the way. I'm not saying they left me, like, to the dogs, do you know what I mean? Like, we did get taught so much things.
But what was the moment when you felt like, I'm on my own here?
It was the feeling of not having that safety net.
Well, look, it turned into the best time of your career. I'm sure you wouldn't argue with that. Let's talk about how special and magical those few years were at Leicester.
Yeah.
When you reflect on it, now you've got that sort of great power of hindsight to actually look back properly.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
What was the magic?
Definitely the team bond was unbelievable. And then I'd probably say, me personally, I'd probably say balance. Like, I've never felt so, like, balanced on and off the pitch during my time at Leicester than ever before.
And explain what you mean by that, Dan.
Like, I was confident. When I got through that first period at Leicester, after that, I was just full of confidence. I wasn't arrogant, I was just confident. And then on the pitch, I was, you know, I was this communicator, but I would never, like, overstep the communication where I'd maybe make someone feel like a bit shit, you know. And then off the pitch, I had like, I was in like a long-term relationship, but then I would also enjoy time with a lot. Everything was just kind of felt right, all felt dead easy. But I think it was just everything felt like such nicely timed for that finish. It's hard to really put into words.
And when you reflect on that time, what is the, you know, for a lot of people, it'd just be like the trophy lift was the famous moment when you won the Premier League. What do you remember though as a moment that kind of summed up what that club did for you and why it was so special?
It was, we won the championship. We nearly got relegated the season after, first season in the Prem. And then the second year in the Prem, we go on and win it. Like if you look at them as 3 years in football, it's just untouchable. I don't think you're going to get that. And then even the year after that, we got to the quarterfinals of the Champions League. It's not something that happens all the time, that.
So when Pearson gets sacked, that's the first time that you've obviously lost the manager, if you like, at a club. So what was the reaction to his sacking? But equally, what was the reaction when you heard that Ranieri was coming in?
I think having Claudio Ranieri come in, it was a huge name and he'd managed some massive clubs. So I think, you know, me included, and the lads were like, bloody hell. Like, the owners are really having a go here. Like, you know, we've just kind of scraped it in the Prem. Like, this is a big sign, this.
And what was he like as a manager?
Oh, he was wicked. Absolutely wicked, yeah. I loved him. I used to call him a granddad. Honestly, he treated me like a grandson. It was just unbelievable. Like, if there was anything I ever needed, even like an extra day off because something that maybe had happened off the pit, he'd be like, no problem, drinks. Just make sure you look after yourself kind of thing, look after your family, whatever, and then just come back the day after and make sure you're good to go. For me, he was exactly what I needed at exactly the right time.
And when did you know or believe you were going to win the Premier League?
I've always said it was City away. I remember that game and we didn't get dominated and luckily score three goals. We kind of dominated the game and kind of battered them. And in the dressing room afterwards, I remember like, fucking hell, lads, like this is our chance, this.
But if you could pinpoint the difference then between the season before where, like you say, you've nearly got relegated to go into City and dominating them, what was the difference?
I think going through what we went through, so that relegation thing and like coming out of it right at the end, I think the momentum of that going into the new season massively helped us. Because, you know, we've almost like flirted with what the possibility was of going back to the championship. And I think that was like a strong feeling for quite a lot of us. And then starting the new season in the Prem, it was like, we're staying in the Prem. There's no two ways about it. Like, we need to do everything we can to make sure we stay in the Prem. And then, you know, you win a game, and then it's like, shit. But yeah, it was just an unbelievable season.
In the moment you lift that trophy, is there any part of you that's thinking about Manchester United and the fact they let you go at that point?
Yeah, there was definitely a part, 100%. There was definitely a, like, almost relief. There was obviously, like, relief that we've just done it, finally. And it personally, for me, it was like, I can still do what I know I can do. It was a huge trophy, but then, you know, that summer window, there was a few of the big clubs, like, knocking on the door wanting to take me, and I was like, listen, I want to kind of see this through with Leicester. You know, I want winning Champions League, like, it's a journey, like, I want to still be a part of it. I think then it was more like, my focus was mainly on Leicester and seeing what we can achieve again. I didn't want to disappear then from Leicester. I wanted to carry on. That was just a driver for me massively.
Of course, the one thing that is bigger than club football is international football.
Yeah.
And this was the time that the moment came where you got an England call up.
Mm-hmm.
How did that feel?
No, that was mad. The first call up, because it was getting talked about quite a bit, and, you know, why is he not in the squads and all that stuff. But I didn't really pay too much attention to that. I was trying not to. I think when I did, equaled the feeling of lifting a trophy for me.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
How did you find out?
We was training on the pitch. It was obviously before the training session, the lads and that, you know, it's like, we was like, oh, drink's going to get called up. And I'm like, no, like, leave it. You got no chance. Like, it's got to train kind of thing. And then the kit man, Macca at the time, at Leicester, ran out, drinks, you're in the squad. And then kind of training stopped and that, everyone just buzzing, you know, high fives everywhere and that. Didn't really sink in. And then when I got home, told my dad, and yeah, probably the first time I've seen him cry, to be honest.
He wasn't as emotional when you won the league?
No. That England call-up for him, I think, was like the big thing.
What did that do for you?
Oh, yeah, it's mad, isn't it? Validation, everything. Like, fucking hell, like, wow. Finally made him proud kind of thing. you know, you go from win the league to like getting your England call up, and it's like, this is what I've worked kind of so hard for.
And what was it like when you turn up for your first
game
with England?
It was mad. I remember, I mean, it wasn't the time when, like, you know, there was Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard and John Terry's. It wasn't that time, but still had like unbelievable players who I looked up to for like the majority of my career. And I was, I mean, you look at like Gaz Cahill, there was James Milner, you know, players I've played with like throughout England levels, schoolboy, that I was now playing in the first team with. That was like a, that was really good, man. The first England period for me was, I was kind of chuffed with myself.
So Leicester was a fairy tale.
Yeah.
England wasn't.
No, it wasn't. Not really. After the fourth or fifth time, or maybe even less, third or fourth time, the kind of, the shine kind of comes off a bit and the kind of reality hits and that. And I, you know, I wasn't really playing. I remember my debut, got my match on my debut, and I was thinking, fucking, like, I'm flying, like, buzzing, when's the next one? You know, and then I went to the next one, didn't really play. And I was like, scratching my head, got cut from the Euros. And I was like, scratching my head again, thinking, like, so what's going on?
Let's talk about the Euros cut. Yeah. I mean, because that was sort of felt from the outside, especially brutal. How did it feel for you?
Yeah, it was. It was, I didn't expect it at all. I remember when they brought Jack Wilshere into the squad for the, so it was that first, we had like a training camp before it. And I know Jack, I've played with him in the schoolboys. He's an unbelievable player, unbelievable. When he was brought in, I kind of knew then, I kind of thought, he's not played all season, like, what's this about? And then we go like a week into the training kind of schedule and you get a feeling.
So you had Roy Hodgson and Gary Neville there at the time, though. You've obviously got the relationship with Gary from your days at United. So what were they saying to you during this period?
Not much, to be honest. There wasn't like a lot of personal interaction to do with the game. It wasn't like, do this a bit more and you're going to 100% be on the plane. There was none of that.
So if you loved Ranieri,
yeah,
how was the relationship with Roy?
Nowhere near the same.
In what way?
Well, I mean, I wouldn't call Roy Hodgson my granddad. I'd call Claudio Ranieri my granddad. I just don't think we probably enjoyed each other's characters as much as what me and Claudio possibly did.
And so how do they break the news that you're...
Well, it was a phone call to the room. So it was like, yeah, it was mad, honestly. So before we disappear off duty kind of thing, it was, right, everyone go back to your rooms and then we'll call a meeting in like an hour. Sound. And then the phone rings. And then I was like...
Who rang?
Roy. And I was like, I know who this is. So I answered, aye. And then it was obviously Roy. Yeah, yeah, I'll come. He wanted me to go to his room. So I was like, yeah, no problem. Come down. And on the way down, I was like, I know I'm cut. So then we obviously just, we spoke. Nothing like, you know, I think it was about this and this. It was just, we just decided with Jack instead of you. You've had an unbelievable season kind of thing. Don't let it kind of get to you. Go and enjoy your summer. So I was like.
And you said?
Sound. You know, and then obviously when it kind of, you know, when you come off your holidays and you're watching the team and then it's like, the fuck? Like, I should be there. I should be trying to help them. But, you know, it's been taken out of your hands. You can't do anything. That would be the closest I've got to possibly playing in the Euros, 100%. And it's just been taken away, do you know what I mean?
Well, what's interesting is, like, you spoke about Claudio Ranieri and it wasn't big things he was doing to build that relationship. So was there some small things that you think, they could have done that better? Or
I mean, with me personally, it felt almost a bit prisony, like international football. You know, you'd go to St. George's Park and you'd be in St. George's Park for 4, 5, 6 days, whatever. And you're literally stuck in the hotel. Like, I live an hour away from that. So, I don't know, to get the best out of each player, could you not give them the option of maybe living in at home and travelling in? I don't know. Possibly. I mean, I used to travel further to Leicester. So that, to me, was like walking a park.
Well, let's move forwards then. So the England thing happens, you go back to Leicester, you get to the quarterfinals of the Champions League, amazing. I'd love to know how you first heard of Chelsea's interest.
It was the season after we won the Prem. So I was aware of that through the whole summer. I think it was through my agent and stuff, there was quite a lot of contact. And the N'Golo Kante deal happened and they had a bit of a falling out between the clubs over the deal. So then they kind of come back and was like, listen, we still want to get this done. you know, but the relationships kind of fell off between us and Leicester. And I was like, listen, I want to stay for this Champions League thing anyway. Let's, well, you know, we revisit it, whatever. And then the January window come and we were still in the Champions League. So I was like, I'm not leaving this. There's just no chance. And then obviously, I think it was it February? I think we might have fell out of the Champions League. So I think then from coming out of the Champions League to the end of the season at Leicester, it was always a bit like I felt imbalanced. Do you know what I was saying before about my balance? And like I felt then it was a bit of an imbalance. I kind of knew I was going to Chelsea. It was just really hard work to get out. Really hard work.
How do you mean?
It wasn't done in the right way for me. It got a bit silly, really.
Can you give us an example?
The director would be in meetings and I'd have to barge in and like try and cause a scene just to get an answer out of him. Do you know what I mean? It shouldn't have been like that. It should have been like, thanks, just sit tight. We just want this much. Just be patient. It's going to happen. That's how I would have liked it to have gone. But you know, it just got a bit silly.
So when you barge in, what are you saying?
Well, just the typical angry little Danny, aren't I? Get a fucking deal done. What's going on?
And they say?
I'm in a meeting, like, what? Get a fucking deal done. And it was just silly. It was just getting daft. And then I remember even Riyadh's got a bit, you know, it was never easy getting out. I mean, it never is really getting out of a club, to be honest. And it's not one I wanted to leave. It's just I had to leave. I knew, like, that had kind of completed its journey and there was no chance I was missing out on this opportunity. So it just needed to happen. And it was just a shame the way it did.
And do you think you managed to influence what happened in the end?
100%.
So the deal happens.
Deal happens.
They don't want an angry Danny staying at Leicester. So
no.
Do you think maybe they thought that?
Yeah. I mean, going back to my United days, I used to be, I remember Ollie, Warren Joyce, and a few of the reserve managers, I think we were at Mick Phelan. I think we were in the meeting at that time and they were like, are you sure like this is what you want to do? Play football? I was like, what do you mean? Yeah. Don't know what else I'm going to do. You just seem like so angry all the time.
Oh, right. Okay. They couldn't see you, the enjoyment that you were getting out of it.
But it was just my way of expressing as a young kid, you know what I mean?
And what did that do for you?
I mean, I'd like to say it fired me up. I'd like to say it made sure I didn't do the mistake again. You know, it was my way of learning kind of thing. But if I could look at it a different way, 100% I would have done. I just didn't have the tools to do it. You know, I just didn't know how to speak kindly to myself to then learn from kind of like a bad pass or like a, you know, a crap shot or a bad touch or something. You know, it was always like, fuck's sake, come on you, what are you doing? It's kind of my reaction to stuff.
And did you have the tools at Leicester before you got angry to try and have like a civil conversation first?
With myself? No. It was just like 0 to 10 pretty much. Like, so if I was doing all the good passes, all the right passes, and then I wouldn't be like, well done, mate, like, well done. It would just be like...
Oh, so you wouldn't give yourself the pat on the back?
No, not really. Looking back now, I'm thinking like, why didn't you? Some of your stuff you used to do, mate, you used to be class.
So where does that come from then?
Like, my dad's exactly the same. If not, me on steroids, like, he's so bad with it. So my dad's like, he works in labour, like he's a building trade. But honestly, like, if you listen to him trying to fix a radiator, you'd be thinking a bomb went off. And it's like, what the fuck am I listening to here?
And was he tough with you as a lad?
Yeah.
But nothing out of the ordinary?
No, nothing out of the ordinary. No, just, you know, I think it was just, again, like, I don't think he had the tools to know how to deal with things differently. And I think I just kind of like picked up on stuff kind of on the way through.
So you, as a father now yourself,
yep.
What would you do differently than what your dad did for you when you're watching your lad play football?
Oh, everything different. To be honest, with my little man, I don't think a little part of me has been like pushing him into football. Kind of like, do what you want to do, mate. Do what you want to do.
So you're trying to get out of Leicester, right? Were you able to use these tools to, like, positive tools to get out? Or did you go straight to the angry Danny as soon as you thought the deal wasn't going to happen?
No, I remember it was Craig Shakespeare at the time with the manager. Yeah. And I remember going to him saying, Shakes, listen, you know this needs to happen. Gutted, it's underneath you. I don't want to leave you. But, you know, the opportunity is just too good. It's been sat there for a bit. I can't not go. Then we kind of talk as people, you know, are you sure you'll be happy in London? Yeah, I think I'd love it, to be honest. And then it's like, you know, you kind of look at it from outside of football and he'd be like, I don't know what they're going to do, drinks, to be honest, but just be patient maybe. there's not much I can do with that, Shakes. This needs to happen.
This might sound a silly question because I get moving to Chelsea is exciting, but what was it for you? Was it the idea of getting to that top four club that you had from United, or was it the financial incentive? What was it that was driving you to be so desperate?
It was that burning in the background, getting back to a top four. It was me wanting to prove people wrong again. Like, United sold me, like, but I'm going to get back there, don't worry about that. Obviously, listen, the finances are great. Like, you know, you're getting put, you was on so much and then you're getting put on this much.
Yeah.
But it was always about that top four, yeah. And being, like, regular Champions League, like, Europa Cup, all them big tournaments, it was all about that.
So should we talk then about life at Chelsea?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, people will make that assumption. 35 million quid, whatever was paid for you. Phenomenal wages, living in London, back at a top club. What was the reality of that move like?
As a whole, it was obviously garbage. But, you know, if you break it down, I had some unbelievable times there. Not unbelievable, but, like, you know, really good times. So, I mean, the first day was madness. Like, literally, it was left Leicester, deal hadn't been done. And it, from what I know, I don't think Leicester planned to get it done. Drove down, sat down there with my agent and a few other people. Was in like a hotel for majority of the day. And then we got an extension on the deadline because it was never done in time. I remember, so Michael Emmanuel at the time, he's like, bear in mind, I think it was like 1-2 o'clock in the morning.
He was the director of football at Chelsea.
Yeah, correct, yeah. And then he's like, you know, shouting down the corridor, let's get this deal done and all this. And I'm sat there thinking, fucking hell, what's going on? And anyway, we get the extension and signed it and all that. And Michael's still in his office. So I've walked down like sheepish and that, like put like a face on. Mike's like, not got the deal done. It's not been done. He's like, fucking what? And I've gone, way! And he's like, oh, jinx, you dickhead. So I'm like, no, it's all done. Like, obviously buzzing then.
Yeah, I bet. So did you have a conversation with the manager?
No, only previous on the phone. Never met him.
What did he
say? I've seen his work in the season and I'm all over it. I'm thinking, wow, this guy's a genius. And like tactically, like he looked like way better than anything else I've ever seen. But it was more about like when we'd speak, it'd be more about, I'm excited to get you at the club, you know, you kind of look like the player that'll slide right in and all the right things.
When do you think things first started no longer going right at Chelsea?
So, I mean, the first season was a bit tricky. I picked up like 3 or 4 niggly little injuries that were just, I mean, it's just part of football, really. You can't really point any things like that.
Was there any part of you that was acting like differently? Because, you know, you've been a great pro till this point. Were you suddenly earning loads of money, out on the lash, having a bit of fun in London, not fully focused on your football? Like, had you changed?
Oh, in the second season, 100%.
But not in the first season.
No, I was.
You arrived and you were.
I was on it. Yeah, I was dying to get going. It was never the fee that bothered me. That was like, that's just separate. It was more like, I need to prove myself again now. Do you know, I've ticked a box by getting back to a top four. Now I need to stay there, kind of thing, and, you know, prove to myself, not about anyone else. It's myself now. Yep. And then, you know, you kind of, you get the injury. You know, it's like, right, okay, go again, come back. And then it was literally at the end of that season, like with Chelsea, it was just, I had this one moment that disappointed me massively, and can't say too much, but hopefully, you know, in the future, it's going to get solved, the kind of thing. But that summer, after that, I was like, I need to go. This just isn't for me. It's not really worked from the get-go. And then this has happened. So I could do with going here. This isn't going to go any better. And I remember in that first season, I bought a big house to move all my family down, all my dogs, everything, have a good go of it. And I was ready to just like forget about that and just go where I needed to get, just so like my career would kind of not go the way it's gone.
So you had to get out.
I was trying to leave that first window.
I appreciate confidences, but what was it? Was it a personal or was it a professional thing?
No, it was. I mean, I can't say too much yet, I don't think, but it was to do with a club, yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices
down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So basically, you've arrived at Chelsea.
Yep.
The very first opportunity to leave, you feel you need to go.
Yep.
And to this day, you're unable to tell people what
it was.
No,
it wasn't. It was so... What I can't say happened before I wanted to go. So it was me then thinking, like, it's just not for me. Like, I need to go. So that was previous. And now in the summer, I'm trying to leave. And then my agent's saying, listen, like, they're not letting you go. They're getting another manager in. Stick around. She's not letting you go. Stick around. So I'm like, what the fuck? Right, okay. I'm making out like, you know, me staying at Chelsea is a really bad thing. Still a great thing. But when you get a feeling, I knew it wasn't going to go the way I wanted it to go, but it was just out of my hands at that point.
And if you were able to tell people now what had happened, would they have a greater understanding of what happened afterwards
I think so, yeah.
And why things got so difficult?
Possibly, yeah. It'd make more sense.
So although we can't talk about that moment specifically, you can tell us the impact it had on you.
I mean, you can see the impact. The season after, didn't play a single minute. You know, that's when we go back to what you were saying a second ago, where I'd get stuck into the London city life. You know, I'd be partying way more than what I kind of want to do. And my focus wasn't on football for the first time.
And you use that term balance quite a few times. Mm. So it sounds now that things have gone completely.
Oh, yeah, completely.
Out of balance. And I'm interested in who was around you to remind you of that balance or to help you try and find a better place.
I mean, it was probably me, to be honest, looking in the mirror kind of thing. It wasn't coming externally. You know, I'd be going into training knowing I wasn't playing. And sometimes, not even training, it was so strange. Like, I'd go to training and I'd be doing fitness on my own whilst the lads were training. And I've never been in that position in my life. And I was like, what is going on here? This is so foreign to me, this. And it's like, the fuck? I'm here to play football, not to, like, you know, I'm not an athletics runner. Like, get me on the pitch.
Didn't you try and have a conversation with the club and say, listen, let's just sort this out. Like, this isn't working for anybody.
At the start, I did. It was Sarri, who's a great guy, by the way, and we got along top. It was so strange. Like, we got along top. I just don't think we've seen eye to eyes. I don't even know if it was from him, looking back now, but I was given an hour to, like, find an English club, and I was like,
how do you mean?
So we had the meeting. He pulled me into his office. This is like an hour before the window closes.
This is under Sarri now?
Under Sarri, yeah. And Gianfranco Zola's in there, who's again a really nice guy. And we're talking, just having chat. And then he goes, let's talk serious kind of thing. I think you're going to get frustrated with your playing time this season. I'm like, what? Where's this? Like, you know, they just signed Jorginho kind of thing, which is fair. But, you know, I'd been a part of his pre-season plans and stuff. I was always playing games. Like, what? Where's this come from? And then Gianfranco, and I was like, I've got an hour. Like, what's going on? Like, no, like, you know, there's a load of Italian clubs out. Like, what the fuck? I've just had a kid. Like, I ain't going anywhere. So what do you want me to do? He's like, well, So I was like, what the fuck? So I just walked out. It was a difficult one, that, because I was in a position there where, you know, first of all, it was a surprise. And then secondly, it's going way against what I wanted. So then it's like, they will just go to Italy or go to Spain in the leagues. And then I'm like, nah, man, my priority is my kid. Like, you've got no chance. Like, this is all changed now. I'm sticking in. This is me. I'm settling here. There was talk of Cesc going at the time. But then, you know, he stayed. Jorginho came in. So I knew it'd be hard work. I knew it wasn't going to be easy. But I did not want to become a part of that loan market that Chelsea's got. It was just never in my plans when I joined, ever.
You've walked out of the office. You've decided that I'm going to stay here.
Yeah.
How did you go about resetting expectations?
If you did.
I think a part of me did. A part of me didn't want to let it go, though. I was literally going in training and my mindset totally changed. So, like, I'd where in the past I'd go into training and I'd be 100% on it every day. I'd be grafting. I'd like to say I'd work just as hard as the hardest person on the pitch, you know, but I'd have my off days where I'd get pissed off or whatever, like, natural. But I was now going into training just to keep people entertained. Like, I'd go in and be like, on the drive in, I'd be like, right, drinks, just don't be a today kind of thing. Just be a nice guy. Like, don't let it piss you off too much. You know, if you can, make people laugh.
Did you feel you'd been forced into this?
You know, football's controlled by transfer windows anyway. So I knew as soon as this one went, I had another 4 or 5 months until January. So it was like, just get on with it. And then that window came and I was like, you know, I didn't have a schedule with my son at the time. It was still all over the place with custody kind of thing. But I was still not willing to go to then mess that up even more because that was my priority. So I think it was taken out of my hands. There's nothing really that I could have done better at that stage.
What do you reflect on as the lowest point?
I'd probably say that season, yeah. I just think the whole season was just tough. It was so hard. Because then, you know, I've got things happening off the pitch and then things are not happening how I'd like to on the pitch. And, you know, we said about balance again. Like, yeah. If shit hits the fan off the pitch, but it's going good on the pitch, you can kind of juggle it a bit. Whereas if both like all over the place, you just don't know how to like react to anything. It was a strange position.
And what came first? Was it the off the field problems you think precipitated what went on it, or was it the other way around?
I don't think it was one or the other. I just think at the time, you know, like that was the club's decision and the manager's decision, and then this is kind of happening, and it just kind of all like fitted in where I just didn't know really how to manage myself.
We had a conversation with Jordan Henderson, who spoke about, again, almost lacking the tools to be able to handle some of the professional challenges. He was coming home and he almost wouldn't open up to his wife, and that created issues that he eventually managed to resolve. And I'm interested in what this professional situation was doing for you, going home and dealing with some of the challenges you were facing.
I was a single lad in London at the time. So I was, you know, without giving too much detail away, I was being a single lad in London. I was getting stuck into living in the city. I was trying to enjoy that side of life as a kind of cover for everything else, basically. You know, that's what I'd use to kind of enjoy myself because everything else was going pretty shitty.
Yeah.
You look back now and it was, you know, I'd be going out drinking, I'd be, you know, single, like I said, so I'd be getting older like any bird I kind of can, and it was just mad. It was just not me as a focused footballer, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And people will look at this and go, you're earning huge money.
Yeah, it means
you're a huge football club. Yeah. You don't even have to go to work. You can just be your own guy. Mm. You're in the capital of England and you're single. You must have been having a great time. What is the reality?
I mean, it does sound great, to be fair. Sounds great. But when everything's not going right and you've got that is irrelevant. It's secondary. Like, earning the wage is absolutely pointless. It doesn't mean a thing. I think anyone thinking earning a good amount of money is going to solve all your problems is just not true at all. You know, and then you've got, like, you're playing for Chelsea, you're earning all that money, like you said, you know. But like, nah, I'm not playing for Chelsea. Yeah, I'm earning money kind of thing, but I'm not playing. I'm not I'm not earning it how I want to earn it. For me, it's a kick in the bollocks, really. And then you get, you know, you're waking up with like a hangover, and then it's like, fuck. Kind of last night's, you know, happiness has kind of disappeared and stuff, and it's back to reality. And then you're going like, right, I've got to go into training now and not kind of train. So I'm not getting like that enjoyment out of work. I mean, I'm trying to put it into perspective for people. So, I mean, imagine like you go into an office job maybe, and then you go into the office and it's not a place where you want to be because the people you're working with, working for...
Don't want you.
Don't want you. Exactly, don't want you. But you're going in there, you're putting on a brave face and you're trying to make the best of it.
How unhappy were you?
Yeah, I was unhappy, man, yeah. I mean, I loved certain parts of it. Like outside of football, I loved it. But as soon as I was in the car on the way in, I was like, fuck.
But we always have high agency, right, over our lives. We always can decide how we react to certain situations. Course, yeah. You know, no one else was making you go out and drink and have a great time and everything else, right? So why were you not able to just press stop on this and go, right, the best thing for me is to still be as professional as possible?
I mean, I'd like to think I was, to be honest. Like, I know I was drinking and doing all that stuff that we've discussed, but I'd still go into training and I'd make sure I was as good as I could be for the lads. That was my only way I could be professional around the place. It wasn't, you know, when they go on and win the Europa League that year, and I'd like to think, you know, me being a bit of a clown around the place in the day kind of helped them. But
you got arrested and charged with drink driving.
No, there was times where...
That's not taking control of your life.
No, accountability is massive for me. I mean, that was a massive wake-up sign for me, like, massive. Because I remember I was in the cell for, I think it was 23 hours I was in it. And, you know, they usually take 2 or 3 hours, them things, I think. And I was in there and I was obviously like, I'm sobering up and I'm in this cell and I'm thinking, what the fuck are you doing, mate? This is not you at all. It's not you as a person. It's not how you want to be as a person. Like, you need to get hold of yourself here. You know, and then that's when I started seeking outside help with it all. So I was then speaking to, like, you know, psychologists and stuff, saying, listen, like, something's not right here. This isn't me. Like, I need kind of some direction, some other focus to improve myself again.
And what was the advice coming back to you from these experts?
One thing that's always stuck in my head, what they said was, they say about spinning plates. I mean, it's quite a well-known thing now, but you know, if you're trying to spin so many plates, there's only so many kind of like plates you can spin at once. I was trying to spin so many at one time. It was just getting way too much. So then I think, you know, slowly like things started to like come together a bit and then everything got a bit lighter, you know. So I wasn't going out drinking as much. I'd go out when I want to go out. You know, I wasn't doing maybe as rash things as what I was doing in the first 6 months.
Would you mind sharing with us, because I think it is so valuable for people to hear a former professional footballer talk about this, your mental health?
I think it's huge, man. I think mental health is probably more important than your physical health, to be honest. You know, you can be physically fit, but if you're not mentally well, your body's going to break down. You know, so I think priority every day of the week should be mental health, 100%.
Now, mentally unwell were you?
I'm not sure if I was in the deepest hole, but it's the darkest I've ever felt, 100%. You know, I've always been the kind of personality that would like, you know, just get on with it, brush things, you know, the typical like kind of man stuff. But during that stage, I just couldn't shift anything. It was almost like you're drowning a bit and you forgot how to swim.
And with an upbringing that you've had, did you feel it was your responsibility to deal with that alone?
Yep. And everyone else's. They can't see it. Don't let them see it. You can't hurt them. I mean, I feel like I get a bit upset, bloody hell. It makes it a bit more harder for me when family's involved. That's what gets me.
What do you mean?
Just the responsibility of, like, of making them possibly feel a bit shit as well.
Did you feel you let them down?
Yeah.
So what did your mum and dad say when you came out of the cell?
they're obviously disappointed, like any parent would be, do you know what I mean? But I think they kind of knew as well, like I wasn't being myself. So I don't think they, like, they didn't hold it against me because they knew, like, I was going through, from outside it looked a bit shitty, but, you know, they were obviously, like, close to me. So they kind of know it's shitty. A bit stupid, isn't it, Dan? Yeah, like, kind of let me go with it kind of thing.
And did you tell them how hard it was?
Not at first, no. Because I didn't want to put any responsibility on them. You know what I mean? Like, when I think when you're going through these things, you almost like kind of bring everything in. And then, you know, and then it obviously gets too much. Then it's just literally like, it's like a flood. I've never really been through that before. I've never had to deal with it before. So this was like my first low point. So I was just a bit like, what's going on here? Like, why do I feel like, you know, loads of questions. Why do I feel like this? Why do I feel like this? How do we deal with it? You know, it's something I've learned off again. It's mad.
So if someone was listening to this then, Danny, what would you say would be the most effective first step for when, if they recognise they're at that low point? What did you take?
Well, I mean, talking's massive. And feeling like you can trust the person you're talking to is massive. And just be kind to yourself, man. It's never just going to be simple. Like, things may have felt simple, but it's not always going to be that way. Like, just give yourself a break, man. Just give yourself a little pat on the back when you need it kind of thing.
Kindness is actually an important element to all this as well, because while all this is going on, you know, there's memes on the internet about Danny Drinkwater. Yeah. You're being nicknamed Danny Drink Beer, Danny Drink Cocktails. I remember seeing an ESPN article calling you the second worst Premier League signing ever. And it's like, this is someone who's suffering with their mental health, having a really difficult time, and then the public pylon happens as well.
Luckily for me, I've never really focused on that. You know, I've never, even when it's been going good, I've never really focused on it. But, you know, you see it. It obviously chips away. I mean, I'm not a fan of mainstream media at all. I just think it's not a good thing. So I kind of stay away from it. But, you know, my mates look at it, my mates tell me about it. So, yeah, it's a bit like, just another thing, is it? One more thing to go with it, sound. Try and deal with that.
Was there ever a point where you wanted just to talk like this almost?
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
Why didn't you?
At the time, I don't think you feel like you can trust a lot of people. And then even if you do, like, you know, is it going to be then put out in the right way? I don't know if it is.
Obviously, a moment came for a reset, right?
Yeah.
Burnley.
Yeah.
Now, the question that people listening to this will be thinking is, hold on, really bad at Chelsea, he gets the chance to make a move, goes to Burnley, who wanted him because they signed him, and he ends up getting in a scrap outside a nightclub.
Yeah.
Is this guy not learning his lessons?
Yeah, it does. It looks pretty bad, doesn't it? So there was a few clubs, and I picked Burnley because I could drive from home, 45 minutes in the car, and I could be close to my son. You know, in hindsight now, I would have gone to another club, worked under a different manager, and the whole thing would have been totally different, but that's an easy thing to say, isn't it? I worked with Sean Dyche at Watford. He was the assistant at Watford at the time, when I didn't enjoy it at all. You know, and I've gone to Burnley just hoping it'd be different, but knowing that I was close to my son. So that was the main reason why I chose that club. And then going into it, I knew his teams were fully, like, fit. I knew they were machines. And I was like, right, exactly what I need. But it didn't work. Just did not work at all.
Why not?
You know, Sean Dyche's got his own ways, kind of thing. You know, you've seen loads of players go under Sean Dyche and not be successful. I think I was just one of them.
For what reason?
Well, first of all, I wasn't playing. You know, he got me fit, but I wasn't playing. You know, he kind of sticks with his teams, and really, it's really, really hard to get in. I'm in the similar position at Burnley Football Club than I was at Chelsea Football Club. So then in my head, I'm thinking, what am I doing here when I can be at Chelsea doing the exact same thing? Like, what is going on? But bear in mind, like, some of Sean Dyche's ways are wicked. Like, off the pitch, he's class off the pitch. I, like, you know, his meetings were brilliant. You know, I don't know how long he's been doing it, but he's got this real thing of, like, the mental side of stuff. And, you know, he's class. But then this Villa thing came up then, you know, and I could stay at home again. and it's another reset. Happy days, like, I have to get this done.
So did he kind of get rid of you because of the night?
No, he wanted me to stay.
You wanted to stay,
yeah,
right?
Wanted me to stay, yeah.
And what happened with that, that nightclub incident?
I can't remember much about it, to be honest. I just remember, again, I was in a nightclub drinking and then got into a little scuffle and then got, like, levered by a few of them. and then I was up in the morning and just my ankle. I just couldn't remember what happened. Right. Went into the training ground, got it looked at, and then I've obviously, like, I think I've, like, fractured or something in my foot. Never happened to any bone in my body at all. It's always been, like, pretty solid. And I was like, shit, fuck's going on here? It was a big hiccup in what I wanted to be, like, a successful loan. But for me, it never felt like a make or break kind of moment, that. Right. It was a strange one, you know, because if it was, like, I would have been told to leave by them. Like, he wanted to keep me, which I can't understand, to be honest, because he wasn't playing me. And I think we both knew all I needed was games. And then, like I said, that's when the Villa thing came up, which was massive.
So you went to Villa?
Went to Villa, yeah.
And how did that go?
Same. no, honestly, like, that's one thing I don't think I've said this much, but I wish, that's one club I wish went different, Villa, because from the moment I walked in, I was like, it surprised me. And it felt almost similar to Leicester. So I was like, come on. Like, finally a club where I feel like I can kick on a bit. The manager was Dean Smith at the time. Great. Chucked me straight in. But, you know, probably I wasn't nowhere near ready. I was miles off it, to be honest. Debut stinking. Two or three games later, obviously, like, still stinking. I'm out of games now for a year and a half. So the speed feels like way too quick. And I'm thinking, fuck, like, it's got away from me a bit here. So I end up doing way too much physical work than what I should be doing. Like, this was myself now trying to push myself a bit too much. Changed my diet, went vegan, pushed myself too much physically. I'd go in quite early at training. I'd swim. I'd do gym. I'd train with a team, I'd do more fitness on my own on the pitch. And then that was like my day then. Whereas when I'm flying, I go in training, chill out, train with a team, chill out, done. Do the odd gym session just to make sure my muscles are firing. Other than that, that was me. Whereas now, like, I'm doing way too much. But I know I'm trying to catch up to something, and I thought, this is the way I need to do it, when it wasn't.
So how did you end up headbutting your teammate?
That was after the Leicester game. So I've gone back to King Power here. It's away, Villa, Leicester, and I think we get beat like 4-1 or something. I didn't even get on the pitch. And I'm like sat on the bench and I'm thinking, fucking hell. Like, this is a place where I used to dominate, like, week in, week out here for quite a good period of time.
How painful was that?
That was probably like football in terms where I thought, I've just had enough of this. Why am I here and not even playing? Like, I've come back, this, and I love football at Leicester, and I've never got it back since I left there, which, you know, is partly my fault. And I thought, oh, I'm going back to where I love football, mint. You know, not starting, fine. When I get on the pitch, fucking buzzing. I'll be flying all over the place. Didn't get on. And then anyone in football will tell you that the day after a game, if you've not played, they are absolute head loss sessions. So they are where, like, nobody's played minutes, and it's, you know, just to get some movement into your legs, and it's just not nice at all as any player. So then we're in a game, and then me and the lad end up having like a little argument, and then it kind of carries on, and, you know, he just tells me to shut up a few two times too many, and then next minute, you know, he's on the floor kind of thing. And as soon as I did that, I felt like shit. Not because of what I did, but because I knew, like, I just knew I reacted to something where I didn't need to react to it. I should have just walked away. I just let him say his piece and walk away. Where I was in, like, what I felt like was such a rut that I thought, fuck no, mate, you're getting it. I should have just walked off.
Had you ever done anything like that before?
I've had fights and stuff,
yeah.
But I've never been told to shut up two or three times and then reacted to it. you know, I'd just like say something back and then whatever happens, happens kind of thing. But I'd never do that.
From what you've said though, you correct me if I'm wrong, but it almost feels at this point like you're almost seeing your career slip away now.
Oh yeah, massively. Oh, it was going and I could feel it going. And I think that's why I was trying so hard to do all them extra bits to try and crawl it back.
Yeah.
And the hard thing was as well is I knew Dean Smith was not counting on me, but I knew he thought, you know, we're going to get you back here. We'll get you back.
So then you've got that additional complex layer of feeling like you're letting people down again.
Yeah, yeah. I think I have, yeah. Well, I have in the background now knowing about it.
Yeah.
And then even that's when COVID came. So literally the COVID period and the season gets extended and my loan contract runs out. And I'm at this point, I'm saying to the gaffer and that, like, obviously, listen, I really appreciate everything. Like, sorry, I kind of let you down, but like, I'm grateful. I want you to know, like, I really appreciate it. And he's like, what do you mean? Like, I'm, you know, go back to Chelsea. No, no, like, we want you to stay. So I'm like, what? What do you mean you want me to stay? What for? And he's like, what do you mean what for? We've got like 8 massive games left or something it was. It's a reset again. It's a massive opportunity. So I was like, gaffer, man, I just don't want to let you down again. Anyway, we ended up having a conversation, ended up signing the extension. And that was even for me, I was like, fucking hell, that's good, that. Like, I really appreciate that. Like, let's see what we can make of it then.
What did you make of it?
Well, COVID came and I felt for the first time in 2 years, I was on an even playing field with the rest of the lads for fitness because I got myself into great shape and no one had played games now, I think, for like 2 or 3 months, was it? So I felt like, fucking hell, like mint. And then we had a couple of friendlies. West Brom felt really good, did really good. And I felt, you know what, drinks buzzing. Made the right decision here. Thanks, Gaffer. Sorted me right out. I'm back. Leicester away. First half of the game. Really good. Dominated again. Hamstring goes. Fucking hamstring goes. I know. And it's like, what fucking... And then it's like, what chance have I got here? Like, what chance have I actually got? And it was like a grade 2, 6 weeks out. And then I stayed at Villa. It was like, the club were great. Got back fit. I think the lads had only played one game because it was such a tricky time, wasn't it, during COVID. First training session in with the boys. Boom, hamstring again. Same leg. And I'm like, fuck's sake, what's going on? What actually is going on? Do you know when I just couldn't feel like I could catch a break anywhere. I've got me trying to get my career back on to where I need to get it or feel like I want to get it. And I'm just getting injured. So what can you do? What can you actually do? I literally felt like my hands were just, it was just, everything was just out of my hands at that point.
So what did you do?
Went back to Chelsea. And then went on loan to Turkey, Kasımpaşa, which was again brand new for me. So I'm going. This is my last chance. I need to work at it. Went, did the fitness test fine. Went down in the gym the day after to do some fitness stuff on myself and my calf goes.
Oh, man.
And again, it's that thing again, like it's out of my hands. Like yeah. I've tried everything.
When was, you know, that famous challenge on that kid that then went viral as well when you were playing for the under 23s? Yeah. Was that right towards the end at Chelsea?
So that, I think that was before the... I think so.
And that was just frustration again.
I mean, I can't remember much about it. I just remember him making a big tackle on me and then I'm just thinking, fucking little shit. Kind of just lashed out a bit. But again, you know, like it was like a little kick. Like, whoopee-doo, man. Yeah. Whoopee-doo. But then, you know...
But you're a story at this point.
Exactly. And, you know, it's an easy target and that's absolutely fine, no problem, but... Don't think I'm not like, I'm just going to take getting splattered by some little kid, like piss off just because I'm going through it a bit. I ain't taking that.
So how does it feel having gone through that with us for the last little while?
Yeah, it sounds a bit sore, doesn't it? You know, it's not been easy. It sounds like someone it would be tough. And this is a thing about expressing yourself. Like when you're going through it, if you're expressing yourself with someone like you can talk to or trust, it does sound like it'd be hard work. When you internalise things, which I was doing, I didn't get it myself. But then when I spoke to someone, it was like, fuck, that does sound like a hard time. And like, you know, careers are careers. I mean, football's a short one and they do come to an end, but not being able to like kind of go through it how you'd want to go through it, it's kind of tough to take as well, I suppose.
So how do you feel that you're almost in that position, but you're walking away from the sport now? So like, what have you learned that would have served you well from when you left United, left Leicester? Now you're leaving football completely.
I mean, I'd say like, listen, it's not just about your physical state. You need to prioritise your mental state. That's probably like where you should be focusing on. If you look at like all the people or players or even other sports, you know, the drivers or anything that's like peak, they all have like a really good, well, what I'd look at and say like mental state. Do you know, like, you know, they all seem quite content, or they always have some kind of stability or like balance, or they're in kind of the right place mentally. So I just think if young players can get that at a young age, that would be absolutely crucial for them in the long term.
And are you at a point now where you can sit here and go, bloody hell, you know, best part of a 20-year professional career and I won the Premier League?
Mm.
Or do you sit here and go, that Chelsea period dominates my thoughts. I let myself down on too many occasions. Where are you at today?
Yeah, I'd probably start with like, you've let yourself down kind of thing, somewhere down the line a few times. But, fuck me, drinks, like you've played for England, you've won the Premier, won the FA Cup, you know, you've played in Charity Shield. Like, you've done great. Like, you've literally done great.
Mm.
Like, this is me coming from, you know, playing football on the estate as a kid, wanting to be this professional footballer. Like, I've done it. And I think now that's the thing, whereas, you know, if I had the same mindset maybe 6 years ago, I would be like, it's not even a shit career. But I've not. Like, I know now I've not. I've done things that most lads only dream of. You know, and taking the medals out of it, you know, I've travelled the world, like, maybe not seen what I'd like to see with football because, you know, you're on a schedule, but there's so many more benefits as well to winning trophies, life experiences, everything, you know, the people you meet.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done class. I'm not
down. What are the lessons you're going to take then from that incredible set of experiences into this next chapter of your life?
Well, I'd like to think, again, it's helped me grow. So I'm a better person from everything. If I can help other people doing it or on their way through, just a bit of perspective on stuff and, you know, I'd like to be able to do that.
Well, listen, mate, thank you so much for coming on this podcast.
Absolute pleasure.
You know, people have watched this unfold, not actually knowing the true story.
Yeah.
And for you to come on and share it in the way you have, it's helpful for people who didn't know, but it's probably more helpful for people who are still to come.
No, thank you. No, hopefully it will help.
Top man.
Thanks, Dan.
Mate, cheers, thank you so much for coming and sharing that.
I was looking at that, I loved it.
Damien.
Jake.
Look, that was a really hard listen at times, actually, wasn't it?
Brutal, yeah. I think whilst I have tremendous sympathy for Danny, there's also an element of frustration as well for him that there was a number of opportunities and moments where it's a sliding doors moment. It could have been very different for him.
I think it's, you know, he had such a great youth career at United. He then had an incredible time at Leicester. It's obvious that the sort of the damage to him in that early period at Chelsea was so great that, of course, he's responsible. Totally, you know, no one gets behind the wheel of a car drunk without taking responsibility for that. And that is an act that is a horrendous thing to do. But obviously his mental health and his struggles and his lack of self-worth and his darkness was such that it went on for a long period of time and almost just didn't allow him to kind of to see what he used to be before he was in this place. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a really good example of when somebody's identity gets wrapped up into who they think they are. So you take away the idea of Danny the footballer, who's left. Danny the man wasn't necessarily somebody that, by his own admittance, he'd invested much time in developing and spending time with. So therefore, he's left with a vacuum and he's filling it with all the activities, almost of like a young adolescent boy, that the adolescent that he'd never been allowed to be because of he was pursuing a career at Manchester United at the time.
And all of this, of course, compounded by his admission that there's no one harder on him than himself. So you know, the negative self-talk, the kind of self-loathing at this point clearly was huge. And you saw him tear up when talking about the impact on his family and the sort of the sense of shame that would have been wrapped up in this as well. But I think the other really important thing is we need this to be a conversation where people also have empathy for the situation that he was in. You know, this is a guy that was struggling in a really bad place. And that's not to make excuses for some of the stuff that he did, but it's to put into context some of the stuff that went on.
One of my favourite theories that is the work of a guy called Kurt Lewin, a famous social psychologist, that said our behaviour is a function of both our personality and the environment that we're in. So we can maybe look at the personality element separately, but the environment stuff will always have a big part of it. So the easiest way of explaining it is that when you cut somebody up in traffic, it's because you're in a rush. When somebody does it to you, we label them a dick or the rude or abrasive or whatever. And I think it's easy to look from the outside in and make judgments on Danny's personality. Whereas when what we've tried to do here is step back and look at the environment, that you see a guy that has been isolated from his dream. These are all quite brutal experiences that then shape how you do behave and how you do react at those key moments. And I think just hearing that is invaluable for us to be able to have, as you say, greater empathy.
Absolutely. Well, we wish him the very best in retirement.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's really brave that he's chosen to come here and share something about the incredible success of his career, but equally the pitfalls that he fell into.
So there we go. Look, I told you that you would perhaps see a side of Danny Drinkwater you hadn't seen before, and I would love to know what you thought of that episode. There are only two things that you can do to help us out, you know. The first one is to share and spread these podcasts to get more people listening to them. And the second thing is to just hit the subscribe button. It takes a few moments, but it means we can grow this podcast channel and attract even more people to come on this platform and share their stories. Remember, remain humble, curious, and chase your own version of high performance. Thanks for listening.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.